The past, present, and future of Social Security. Social Security had a birthday last Friday. 85 years ago, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act into law, providing an insurance program designed to pay workers a continuing income after retirement. FDR's Labor Secretary, Frances Perkins, who has deep connections to Maine, is considered the architect of Social Security. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What Social Security will look like in the future is unclear. A declining birth rate, rising life expectancy, and other factors have added up to a financial strain on the system. And the coronavirus pandemic adds more pressure as people are out of work and the president has ordered a payroll tax holiday. Today on Maine Calling, Social Security. That's next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Social Security has been around for 85 years, and a new AARP study shows that the vast majority of Americans believe it is important. But its long-term solvency is unclear, and solutions can be political hot potatoes. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss Social Security, past, present, and future. My guest today, Lori Parham, the State Director of AARP Maine, and Gopi Shah Goda, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research at Stanford University. She's also a fellow with the National Bureau of Economic Research. And as always, want to hear from you. Do you have questions about the future of Social Security? Do you have questions about whether or not you ought to be taking Social Security now, maybe because you've lost your job or are feeling uncertain? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, a brief email, please. Tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Lori Parham, regular listeners of Maine Calling will be well aware that Frances Perkins, who has deep connections of Maine, was FDR's labor secretary and is considered the architect of Social Security. Take us back to 1935 and what it was like for retired people then and what Social Security was meant to solve. Why was it put into place and was it expected to be what it is today?
Hi, Jennifer. It's great to be with you. And yes, we're fortunate that we have Frances Perkins and her legacy here in Maine. You know, many of us know about Social Security, and it just feels like it's always been a part of our life in the U.S., but it isn't that way. And, you know, early on, when a lot of folks were living in rural areas on the farm, extended families and neighbors took care of their own and really struggled together. But, you know, we saw a migration to cities for work, and some of those traditional supports of family and community began to fall apart. And then you had the Great Depression, and this really started to transform public attitude in the 30s. You had skyrocketing unemployment, people's life savings vanished because of bank failures. And during that time, more than half of older Americans were living in poverty. And so this is when the country really turned to Washington for help. And as you said, President Roosevelt, working closely with Frances Perkins, considered this idea that is now Social Security.
Has it changed much over the years?
Well, we have. That's correct. I mean, the initial law passed was signed in 1935, and it was focused on insurance to help seniors and needy children. And we have seen some changes over time, but the fundamental reason for the program to really shore up long-term security for the American people remains. And it has been, we like to say that in good times and in bad, for now 85 years, this is the program that's been there for the American people.
Gopi, I want to ask you about the solvency of Social Security. We hear alarming statistics from time to time. In my entire lifetime, I remember being a college student being told, don't count on Social Security. for when you retire, you and the Gen X generation, what is the truth? What's the long-term financial situation?
Hi, Jennifer. It's great to be here with you speaking about Social Security. So when we think about the long-run solvency of the Social Security program, we have to think about whether the income that the program is set to receive over the future, how that compares to the benefits that the program is scheduled to pay out into the future. And we've long known, actually, that there's an actuarial imbalance, which means that the income that the program is set to receive is actually less than the benefits that they're scheduled to pay out. And this imbalance means that there's a gap, but not that Social Security won't exist in the future. What it means is that starting in 2035, in the most current trustees report, which is already a little outdated because it doesn't take into account the COVID pandemic, but under the most recent trustees report, the program is set to incur, not have enough reserves to continue to pay the benefits at the rate that they're currently scheduled to pay. And so what that means is that if no action is taken starting in 2035, the program would only be able to pay about 79% of scheduled benefits. It could do that going into the future. The rate changes a little bit over time, but the program won't go away. And there are a lot of things that we can do now to strengthen the program so that when we get to 2035, we'd be able to pay a greater share of scheduled benefits than we can right now.
And I know there are all sorts of proposals to strengthen it. One is raising the retirement age. It's already gone up, correct, from 65 to 67. But I'm wondering, and something that people talk a lot about is raising the cap. And I'm wondering, Gopi, if you can explain that concept and tell us how high that would need to be raised to make Social Security solvent.
Sure. So currently, Social Security covers earnings up until a certain amount, which is called the taxable maximum. And that taxable maximum increases every year with the average wage index. It's set so that in the early 80s, it covered about 90% of covered payroll. Of total payroll, that rate has actually declined over time. So it only covers about 85% or even less of total payroll at the moment. And so some people call for increasing the taxable maximum so that it continues to cover about 90% of total payroll. And increasing that taxable maximum increases the revenue that the program receives. It also would increase benefits for some if the benefit formula isn't changed. But the net effect of that improves the solvency situation of the Social Security program and can help strengthen the program. That's one way to increase improve the program's finances. There are a myriad of different ways. They all involve either raising the revenue or reducing benefits. And there are a number of different combinations of those two approaches that could make the program solvent into the long term.
Well, let's stick with this concept of changing the taxable maximum. What is it today, and how much would it need to be raised to fix the problem, the long-term problem?
Yeah, so the taxable maximum today is... is $137,700. I'm not exactly sure what the number would have to be going into the future to maintain the solvency of the program, but that there certainly it's currently set to increase with the average wage index, and it would have to increase faster than that in order to bring more revenue into the program.
I see. So if the wage index goes up 3%, it might need to go up 4 or 5%.
Correct. It would have to do that probably for a number of years before the taxable maximum was high enough to bring the program into solvency, long run solvency.
All right. I understand. Lori, let me talk to you specifically about people in Maine. Give us some numbers. How many people in Maine depend on Social Security, and how many are expected to 5, 10 years from now?
Sure. So in Maine, more than 242,000 retired individuals are receiving Social Security retirement benefits right now. And we know Maine is the oldest state, and so these numbers are going to continue to increase. We know, so Social Security not only offers retiree benefits, it also offers survivors benefits for families who may have lost a couple where one individual passes away and there may still be children in the household, and then also provides disability benefits as well. And so, for example, we know here in Maine, approximately 7% of those who receive Social Security are children. That's one of the things that a lot of folks don't know about the program is that this is a program that really through the payroll taxes that individuals pay in over the course of their working lives, this is an insurance policy that for if you retire and you haven't had access to a 401k or a public pension, we know those are going away, or a pension, we know those are going away. But if there are other family catastrophes, that this is a program that will be there. So we also know in Maine that approximately a third of Maine seniors, 65 and older, rely solely on Social Security for their income. So here in Maine, this is a hugely important program for Maine people.
All right. Mopi, I want to ask you about, Gopi, I want to ask you about the COVID pandemic and its impact. Even somebody who's not an economist can guess, gee, a lot of people out of work, that means a lot of people not paying into Social Security. Do we have a sense of the scale of the impact of the pandemic on Social Security?
Yeah, so that is the primary way that the pandemic is affecting the finances of the Social Security program right now, is that as fewer people are working, there's less revenue coming into the program. And right now, what we know is that there are some projections that if payroll tax revenues into the program reduce by 10% for a couple of years, that does move forward the date where Social Security can no longer pay 100% of its benefits from using its reserves and the current income coming in. So that pushes it forward to about 2034 at the moment. But of course, that could change a lot depending on what happens over the next few years. If payroll tax revenues are depressed for longer than a couple of years, then the date of reckoning, so to speak, would become even earlier.
And just to be clear, the phrase payroll tax refers to the amount of money taken out of an employee's paycheck to go toward Social Security and also the amount of money that the company pays toward an employee's Social Security, correct?
Exactly. There's two components of that payroll tax, one that the employer pays and one that is taken out of an employee's paycheck each period.
Yeah, I've always wondered why it's referred to as a tax. Why is it called a payroll tax?
You could think of it as a contribution, but the contribution doesn't directly tie into the benefits that you receive to the program. So for some people, the amount of taxes that they pay over their lifetime is actually less than the amount that they'll receive in benefits. And for others, that amount is more than what they'll receive in benefits. So I think, you know, there's not a direct one-to-one tie in terms of what people pay into the program and what they receive out of the program.
Lori, I know that AARP, the national office, did a big survey to coincide with the 85th anniversary of Social Security. Talk about its findings. Were any of them surprising to you?
So this is part of an effort as we celebrate Social Security's birthday each year to really get a sense of where the American people are and our members are. And this was a survey of individuals 18 and older, really trying to get a sense of the program, especially across generations. And what we found is that overwhelmingly across party lines, Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, that Americans view Social Security as a really important government program. And a majority of voters also believe that it's more important for retirees now, especially in light of the pandemic. We've seen how individuals and families are struggling even more with COVID. And so not only are we finding through this research that Americans support this program and believe in it, but they also really are, need to rely on it. I mentioned pensions earlier. We're seeing fewer and fewer companies offer pensions. And while some offer 401ks, a large number of Americans, and here in Maine, more than 200,000, don't have a way to save for retirement through work. And so Social Security becomes even more important. We don't think it should be the only retirement option for people, but it's a hugely important one that really is there no matter how the economy is doing.
All right. Gopi, President Trump last week ordered a payroll tax holiday because of COVID. We have a tweet here from Marfine. Can you clarify President Trump's executive orders on Social Security? How does it help or hinder the long-term viability of the program? What exactly did the president order? How long will it last? And what does it mean for the future of the program?
So President Trump ordered a suspension of the payroll tax collection starting September 1st. The idea was to put more money in people's pockets, increase their take-home pay in light of the current COVID pandemic. There's still some clarification happening about exactly what will happen in terms of whether take-home pay will increase. It depends a bit on how employers respond. And there's still a lot of details being worked out. He's also made comments about making that payroll tax suspension permanent. As we've discussed earlier, reducing the income into the program will not necessarily serve to strengthen the program going forward. There are reasons why you might want to possibly think about strengthening the program later once our economy is stronger. But sort of moving in the other direction may not be the way that you want to address Social Security's finances right now.
And Gopi, I understand that some people have suggested that any money that somebody gets this year because of the holiday, they may have to pay back next year. Is that really a possibility?
I'm not exactly sure on the details of how the suspension would work. I don't know if Lori could speak more to that.
Sure. We're also concerned about what this will mean. And one point I want to make before this question of repayment is that the payroll tax, a holiday or deferment, is meant to put some money back in workers' pockets, but it does nothing for folks who are retired, for example. And so after this executive order came out, one of the things that we said publicly was that we really need to look at, again, as we think about COVID relief for all Americans, and what can we do to make sure that anyone is struggling is going to get a little bit of extra relief. As we look at the current proposals, and as Gopi said, there are still a lot of questions, and we've written to the president to ask for more of an explanation of what this will mean, because we are getting questions from our members. But there is the possibility that individuals will have to pay back that deferred amount as part of their taxes for the 2020 year. And that's why we really need to see what this is going to look like, and we need clarification so people are aware. And we also at this point don't know what businesses are going to decide to do, how they're going to manage that piece. Are they going to hold back as well? Are they going to change their payment system? So again, we really do need some additional information.
We're talking about Social Security on Maine Calling. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or again, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Cancer Specialists. Proud to be a member of the Dana-Farber Cancer Care Collaborative and committed to helping patients achieve their best outcome. Epic Sports in downtown Bangor, now open for in-store shopping and curbside pickup. Epic Sports, your adventure starts here. And Maine Coast Waldorf School, connected in community, now more than ever. Accepting applications for fall 2020. MaineCoastWaldorf.org.
The Democratic National Convention begins tonight. Party leaders say they're eager to showcase a platform that isn't just opposed to the current administration.
This election isn't just about defeating Donald Trump or Mike Pence. It's about building this country back better.
Live tonight with recaps and analysis tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Live coverage of the Democratic Convention starts this evening at 9 on Maine Public Radio and at 8 o'clock on Maine Public Television. If you've been away from Maine and you're a classical music fan, you may be pleased to note that our Maine Public Classical over-the-air FM network serves many areas of the state, including Portland, Bangor, Waterville, parts of western Maine, down east, sections of mid-coast Maine, and many areas of York County. And it's always available online at mainepublic.org or with the Maine Public app as well. 24/7 classical music. Information about how to find Maine Public Classical is at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, understanding Social Security and answering your questions about the program, especially now during the COVID pandemic. My guests are Gopi Shah Goda, who is Deputy Director and Senior Fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research at Stanford University. She is a fellow with the National Bureau of Economic Research. Also on the line with us, Lori Parham, who is State Director of AARP Maine. As always, want to hear from you. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Gopi, before we go to more audience questions, I wanted to ask you a really practical question. If someone's listening to this program and he or she's in their late 50s or early 60s and maybe has lost their job, been furloughed or laid off, what are their options in terms of Social Security and should they even be thinking about it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Social Security is a program that provides retirement benefits and disability benefits, as Lori noted earlier. So if someone qualifies for disability benefits, they can apply at any age if they're eligible for the benefits through their work history until the normal retirement age, which currently is increasing to 67. It differs a bit based on your birth cohort. People who are not eligible for disability benefits but want to claim retirement benefits, they would have to wait until age 62. That's the first age that they can claim retirement benefits. But those benefits are going to be lower than what they would receive if they had claimed later. So the latest age that you can claim is age 70, and the benefits that you receive if you claim at age 62 are much lower than what you would receive if you claim at a higher age.
So what do you want to think about if you're 62 years old and let's say you've just lost your job or are thinking about taking early retirement or have been furloughed?
Yeah, so one of the things that you should think about first is whether you're eligible for unemployment insurance. Because those benefits are specifically for people who have been laid off from their employer. And until recently, they were enhanced, but there's still some possible discussions going on about enhancing those benefits into the future. And claiming unemployment benefits is probably the first thing that someone should look at if they've lost their job before turning directly to Social Security. One of the while Social Security is available to people, as early retirement benefits starting at age 62, those lifelong benefits that you will receive at a lower level from claiming earlier will persist into the future. And so it's an important decision to make as to what is the right age to claim Social Security benefits. And it's one that you shouldn't necessarily take lightly. You should look at your complete financial situation to figure out when is the right time to claim benefits. There are also other types of retirement savings that someone may have at their disposal. So if you have individual retirement accounts or employer 401k plans, oftentimes you can take withdrawals from those benefits at age, starting at age 59 and a half without incurring any penalty. So that's another potential resource for people who have accumulated savings in one of those vehicles.
All right, we'll go to Marie, who's calling from Harrison. Hi, Marie, go ahead.
Hi, I am a nurse, not working clinically, but I'm in the baby boomer age bracket, unemployed, no income, and I have been contributing for over 50 years to Social Security. I've now just become eligible to take my first monthly benefit, and I'm a little concerned when I hear President Trump with his executive orders. My question is, can a president now or the new elected administration, if there is one, tap those funds earlier than the early 2030s? I'm currently unemployed with no income, and I've been watching this very closely.
So just to be clear, Marie, you worried, wondering if a current or future president could issue an executive order that impedes your benefits?
Correct. Would tap Social Security in total?
Sure. Gopi, do you know the answer?
Well, changing the Social Security benefits would be an act of Congress and would require more than just an executive order. In addition, a lot of the reform proposals that people are have been seriously considering for many years in terms of bringing the program into balance would always protect the benefits of those who are either already receiving retirement benefits or close to receiving retirement benefits. The rationale being that they can't really plan for any change in Social Security benefits by either saving more during their working years or changing their spending. And so my view is that there's no reason to be worried as a current or soon-to-be retiree that your benefits will change dramatically as a result of any congressional action to bring the program into solvency.
And anything to add, Lori?
That's I was going where Gopi was, and I think this is why, as part of our engagement work, and for folks like our caller who are watching this issue closely, it's really important to pay attention and to be asking the candidates where they stand on this really important program, given we know how important it is to the American people.
Marie, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Paris and Christine. Hi, Christine. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I was just wondering, I had been reading recently, I am a baby boomer on the cusp of baby boomers, and in my early 60s. And I just was wondering about what I'm seeing with a lot of these stores. Like I read recently, Walmart is planning on going to all self-checkout at some point. And what automation is going to do when jobs are eliminated to Social Security at large? So I just was wondering if you might address that.
Gopi, I'm going to pass her question to you.
Well, so yeah, we're still, I think, you know, trying to understand better what automation will mean for the workforce in total, and especially older workers in terms of available employment opportunities. In terms of, you know, that is very related to how the program is financed as well, in terms of the payroll tax revenues that fund the program that for current retirees. And, you know, I don't know a lot of evidence that has so far tried to really estimate how that automation will affect Social Security finances in the long run. There are some people who have a very optimistic view that people will adjust and there will be other types of jobs available for people who have been displaced by automation. And there are others with more pessimistic views where this could lead to potentially more inequality and more issues with people with lower levels of education, for example.
Christine, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Hudson and Patty. Hi, Patty. Go ahead.
Hi. Two things. One, I was wondering if anybody had known about the historical fact that my belief is that Social Security was fully funded it had a fund that paid itself, it invested, and it did interest just like a regular 401k. And back in the Reagan administration, they actually raided that fund. And that is why we now have this pay-as-we-go kind of thing happening, that the people who are paying now are actually paying for the people who are retired now. And that was never the intention of the setup of the system. And the other thing is...
Go ahead. That,
the other thing is that I currently am on Social Security, and I receive $1,147 a month. And I'm not sure people realize how little is being paid to people on Social Security when they talk about it being an entitlement. It is not an entitlement. I worked for years and paid into it. So those two things I thought might be interesting for people to know.
Lori, why don't we talk about first about the Reagan administration. Is it true that Social Security was raided then? And how much of an impact does that have today?
So in 1983, that was the last time we saw relatively larger changes to the Social Security program. At that time, Congress agreed to gradually raise the age for full retirement benefits from the traditional level of 65 up to 67, and we're seeing that increase. It's still being phased in. The 1983 law also introduced taxation of Social Security benefits for higher income retirees. So you will hear from some folks who are frustrated because of their higher income, especially if they have other sources of retirement income, that they will be taxed on their Social Security benefits. This is causing a growing number of people to pay income taxes on part of their Social Security income. So those were the biggest changes in 1983. You know, the way that the program works is that individuals do pay in and while they're working, and those who are retired are accessing those benefits. And it's one of the reasons why we had the question around automation, that you have the trustees report and that the trustees do projections and take into account all kinds of factors like birth rates and death rates, as well as productivity, wage levels, and employment, to really make sure that Congress has the information they need as we consider changes to the program going forward.
Patty, thanks for your question. An email
Can I just add something?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the program has always been a pay-as-you-go program, and so there's nothing major that changed in that aspect of the financing of the program in the 1983 amendments that Lori described. The one thing that did change is they actually increased the payroll tax more than you might have needed to pay benefits at that current point in time, so that the program would develop a surplus, which is now being depleted. And one of the reasons for that is because of the demographic transition that occurred that led to the baby boom, and the ratio of retirees to beneficiaries is quite different now than what it was 50 years ago. And this was something that was foreseeable because we knew that birth rates were higher in the late 40s and 50s. And so part of the thing that the 1983 amendments did was deliberately build up a reserve that could then pay for those higher benefits that would be paid to the baby boom generation.
Is what happened that the reserve was deliberately built up, but it wasn't enough? And in part, the reason it wasn't enough is because people are living longer than was projected?
That's right. That is part of the issue. So it was dealing with the kind of the baby boom generation, the elevated birth rate, but not with the systemic increases in life expectancy that we've seen over the last century. That is one of the things that is leading the program to continue to be out of balance into the future. And so some of the reform proposals that are more sustainable are ones that look not just within a short, I'll call it a short window, a 75-year horizon, but actually looking beyond that 75-year horizon and trying to make sure that benefits are sustainable even beyond that window.
An email here from Mike. My wife's and my experience applying for Social Security could not have been more positive. The professionals assisting us at the Portland office on Forest Avenue were efficient, attentive, and totally respectful. It was a welcome surprise to be so happy and grateful about this interaction with a so-called government bureaucracy. And an email from Ham. I keep getting emails from a group called Social Security Works asking for money. Who and what are they? Lori, are you familiar with this organization?
I am familiar with Social Security Works, and they are an organization that is very much pro-Social Security and really tries to educate folks on the program, how it works. There are a lot of myths around the program, and GOPI clarified the pay-go provisions, the pay-as-you-go provisions, and how they've always been a part of the program. And so they spend a lot of time making sure folks know the latest, advocating for it, and really working to ensure that the benefits that are provided to recipients remain strong and that we don't see cuts.
We are going to take another quick break. We're talking about Social Security. More of your comments and questions. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Modern Pest Services, offering a non-toxic approach to pest control with Anti-C-Mix Smart Pest Control Technology. ModernPest.com. And Sweetser, now hiring for compassionate careers in mental health, developmental, recovery, and education. Sweetser.org/careers.
On August 17, 1937, the Appalachian Trail is completed with a final link built between Sugarloaf and Spalding Mountains. Officially called the Appalachian National Scenic Trail, the trail is about 2,200 miles long, extending between Springer Mountain in Georgia and Mount Katahdin. The Appalachian Trail Conservancy describes the Appalachian Trail as the longest hiking-only trail in the world. More than 2 million people are said to have taken a hike on part of the trail at least once each year. Passing through 14 states, most of the trail is in forest or wildlands.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries and the Maine Maritime Museum. Happy birthday, Maine! On the next Speaking in Maine, the struggle for America.
Even before the Civil War, churches divided on the basis of slavery. And in fact, the Southern Baptists have never gone back to make an alliance with the North again.
Join us for a discussion on the role evangelicals might have in the November election and why it matters. This program is from the 2020 College of the Atlantic Champlain Institute, whose theme was November 3rd, What's at Stake? That's Monday afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about Social Security. Our guests are Lori Parham, who is the State Director for AARP Maine, and Gopi Shah Goda, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research at Stanford University. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Lori, before the break, we heard from a caller who said her benefit was just a little over $1,000 a month. Is that typical?
In Maine, we tend to see lower benefits for our retirees. And so, yes, it is. And that's, we can't say enough how important this program is to so many Maine seniors. And when you think about rising costs, the cost to heat your home, the cost of food, and increasingly now the cost of health care, and you know, your Medicare premium comes out of your Social Security check. And so out-of-pocket costs, you know, Medicare doesn't cover everything. You can eat away at that $1,100, as the caller said, very quickly. You think about housing costs. So that is why we remain committed as an organization to protecting the program for current and future retirees, while also working to help ensure that there are other options for savings as well, because Social Security is important. It's helped a lot of seniors stay out of poverty, but we need to do more.
All right. An email from Lenny. Why not tax all income? Why is there a cap? Makes no sense. Could easily be solvent. Gopi.
that is definitely a possible solution to addressing the solvency issues of the Social Security program. It's one that puts all of the burden on increasing revenues rather than reducing benefits. And so, you know, where there's a whole menu of options, and I think that one could pick and choose different parts of that menu in order to come up with a solution that will make the program solvent. And increasing taxes has some pros. It has some cons. In the pros, it doesn't affect benefits for lower income beneficiaries. It protects those benefits. It actually might even increase some benefits for higher income individuals because more of their income is subject to the Social Security formula. It does so in a progressive way, so it increases taxes more among higher income individuals than it would increase their benefits, and that's how kind of the program becomes more solvent. It's definitely one of many different options of making the program more solvent in the long run.
We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Yeah, they were talking about the proposal by the president to delay payment. It has long been a goal of the GOP to do away with Social Security, and one of the ways he can do that is by doing exactly what he's done, saying we're out of money and we have to eliminate the program. I think it's an extraordinarily dangerous thing to do. I'm not on Social Security. I have a different type of retirement, so it doesn't affect me, but I think it's extraordinarily dangerous for him to have done that.
All right, Larry, thanks for your call. And Lori, this is something we hear over the years. Is it your sense that is still a goal of some Republicans to end Social Security?
You know, we have, there have been proposals that have talked about privatization and how we should invest Social Security instead of in bonds that are backed by the full faith and credit.
Sure,
of the
President
US government.
Bush was behind that. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, and we mobilized a strong campaign against privatization, and we haven't heard a lot of that, but you do see those proposals on the table. Again, you know, we get back to this issue of Social Security as part of a broader portfolio, and I hate to use that word, for retirement. But ideally, all Americans would have the ability, would have Social Security, and would have other ways to save. But private pensions are going away. Not all companies offer a 401k, and many workers, especially in the service industry, have no way to save for retirement. And so Social Security in its current form, through good times and bad, when we think about the financial crisis back in 2007 and 2008, when folks saw their portfolios drop, if they were fortunate enough to have a portfolio, and even through COVID, things are coming back up, but there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. And yet, through good times and bad, Social Security has been there. And they've never missed a payment in all of the years that the program has been in existence. And so, and then if you look at the latest polling across the board, across party lines, the American people feel deeply that this program should be there and that in many cases, frankly, it's not doing enough to shore up retirement.
Larry, thanks for your question. We have a lot of similar emails and tweets and questions here. I'm going to go to the one from Lynn, but several people are asking a similar question. Is there any discussion about ending the windfall that prevents retired Maine educators from collecting their full Social Security benefits? And I believe it's not just Maine educators, but many people who were state employees. Lori, can you explain what's going on and why that may or may not ever change?
Sure. I thought we might hear from some of your listeners who are retired educators or in other jobs. There are two issues. There's the windfall elimination provision that if you, in essence, if you've spent part of your life working for an employer who wasn't part of the Social Security system and you're earning a pension from that employer, so you could get hit by this provision. And what it means is that the Social Security Administration uses a different formula to compute your benefit and that your benefits can be reduced. Also, along with this is what's called the government pension offset provision.
And this also impacts a lot of our retirees. If you qualify for spouse or survivor's benefits and Social Security, but you also get a pension because of your work, local or state or federal government, you could have a reduced Social Security payment. This is a huge challenge. It's a difficult problem to solve. It's one we track closely through the National Retired Teachers Association, which is part of AARP. And I saw that Senator Collins has put out statements about this, as have the rest of the delegation. But it's a hugely expensive provision to fix, and it's definitely something that should be looked at. And we know so many people in Maine are impacted by it. I hear from a lot of your listeners about it. So it's something we're tracking, but it's not an easy fix.
And this affects a lot of people, correct? If I, for example, if somebody worked in the private sector until he or she was 50 and then decided to become a school teacher and work 10 or 15 years as a school teacher, this impacts that person. If someone has been a state trooper and retires and then takes a job in the private sector, these are all people who are choosing between a full Social Security benefit and a pension benefit, correct?
Yes, and often we have had many calls from folks who are not aware that they did not know this was going to happen to them until they signed up for Social Security. And in fact, it was an issue, a different state, Louisiana, but it was an issue that my grandmother went through, and it hugely impacted her monthly retirement. And so Maine is one of 13 states that is impacted by the provisions. And again, that's another issue where it isn't nationwide. It's just in this set group of states. And so it becomes an even greater challenge to fix.
So even though you mentioned Senator Collins, for example, this is something that can be changed by the state government, by the state legislature.
It's my understanding that there are federal changes. Well, there is the state piece, but that there would need to be federal change as well. I may not have that correct, but it was my understanding that you would need to look both at the state and at the federal level.
Okay, Gopi, at Stanford, anything to add to that?
No, that sounds right to me, that I think a lot of those provisions are written into Social Security and would require federal action. You know, back when state and local governments were largely folded into Social Security, some states decided to remain outside of the program, and that's what led to these types of provisions.
Sure. We'll go to Bob calling from Portland. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about President Trump's delay in the withholding tax through his executive order. I think it's important to recognize that unless the federal legislature changes the law in retrospect, makes it retroactive, the people will have to pay that back. It isn't a gift. It's only a slight delay. And the other thing is businesses might not go along with it because under certain circumstances, they could possibly be held responsible if the money doesn't appear from the individuals.
Okay, so Gopi, just because the president has issued this order doesn't mean it's going to happen. And even if it does, people may need to pay it back. Gopi, this is what we were talking about earlier, correct?
And just like Lori said, this doesn't help retirees who are already receiving Social Security benefits. It also doesn't help the unemployed. People who aren't currently paying the payroll tax don't get any relief from any type of suspension or delay.
All right. We have a question here from Patricia. My husband and I will begin to collect Social Security benefits in 2 years. We have worked hard all our lives to accrue a small retirement savings and will rely on our benefits. Will retirement benefits be need-based? Gopi, they're not need-based, are they, Social Security benefits?
They're not exactly need-based. They do vary by your lifetime income. The formula that translates your earnings into benefits is slightly progressive, which means it offers a higher replacement rate to people with lower average lifetime earnings than people with higher average lifetime earnings. But it is not a need-based program. Everyone who has paid into the system for 10 years, there is an eligibility requirement, but everyone who has paid into the system for 10 years does receive a benefit.
All right, we'll go to Friedrichs calling from Milo. Friedrichs, we're getting tight on time, so if you can be quick, that'd be great.
Okay, I recently read online that if you retire at 62 and collect Social Security until the age 65. At that age, if you pay back all the money you got from Social Security, that you could collect at the higher rate from the age of 65. Is that true?
Gopi?
Well, so you can decide that you don't want to claim at the age at which you claimed and instead choose a higher claim age. But I believe that's only available to you within the first 12 months after you've claimed benefits. Lori might have more to add there.
That 12 month requirement is true, and this is the case for folks who may have been out of work and then gone back to work, and so they claimed but then realized that were able to get back into the workforce and that they could get an income that may have been greater than what we're getting in their Social Security checks. So they have that time, in essence, to quote unquote start over, start fully in and claim at a later age.
Okay, Friedrich, thanks for your call. Yeah, I'm going to try to squeeze in one more. Kathy in Bath, if you can be quick, that'd be great.
Okay, my question is, I'm ready for retirement next year. What the spousal benefits are, I was told recently that I thought it was one half, but I was told recently that it can be anywhere from one third to one half, and also that your ex-spouse has to be retirement age before you can collect.
Lori?
So you can collect if you are divorced and your former spouse paid into the system correctly, or you have the credits, you can collect on those earnings unless or until you were to remarry. And yes, Gopi, maybe you can help out on, if you are older than your spouse, can you start collecting or does the spouse have to retire first?
I believe the spouse has to retire and then the person receiving spousal benefits can claim their spousal benefits, but I'm not 100% sure on that. The spousal benefits are equal to half of the higher earner's benefit, and they can be larger if that spouse also had an earnings history. Then mm-hmm. they receive the higher of their own benefit or the spousal benefit, which is equal to a half of the primary worker's benefit.
Kathy, thank you for your call, and thank you to our guests. We're out of time. That's Gopi Shah Goda, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research, and Lori Parham, State Director for AARP Maine. Nikki Shields ran the board. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.